each position, for me, I always felt like I was flying by the seat of my pants. I was just like in sheer terror. Like, I don't know how to do these jobs. And it was a lot of like education and like a lot of reflection and how do you bring people. I think it was also a lot of vulnerability. Like,
do you have advice on if you're new to having hard conversations? Like, how did you overcome that both as a manager and then taking on this huge HR role?
I think it's listening more than you're talking. Hard conversations can often get compounded when we're not listening.
If you could swap lives with someone at MetroStar for a day, who would you swap with and why?
Oh man, that's such a good one.
I'm Rachel Coble.
And I'm Liz Dean.
Welcome to Mock It. This podcast interviews industry experts from AI innovators to UX architects to nonprofit leaders and lots of people in between.
We explore the back of the napkin ideas that impact the nation, so you don't have to dig for the discoveries yourself. Enjoy and don't forget to like and subscribe.
Hi, welcome to this week of Mock It. We're really excited to welcome on Debbie Peterson, who is the Senior Vice President of People and Culture at MetroStar. But years ago, she started as a contract employee for, I think, 6 weeks. As a proposals writer. So she has definitely paid her due here at MetroStar. And we talk about her journey into different careers and what's really important in how you go about new job titles.
Yeah, we also hit upon difficult conversations, handling the pandemic and various cultural challenges that happen when you have a growing company that spans across the country.
Absolutely. And this has nothing to do with this episode, but if you haven't registered for International Women's Day yet, our panel and networking event that is both on YouTube Live and in person in Reston, Virginia, then before you even listen, go to the bio and click on the link to International Women's Day and register.
Happening on March 8th.
Yes. But after you do that, get ready for a great episode with Debbie. Let's get into it.
Do you have a craft room at home?
I have a craft closet.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And I also like dabble in a lot of things. So I got really into the paper gift wrapping.
Wood burning. That's cool.
I got really into wood burning. I got really into crochet and I was making it all my nieces and nephews like little stuffed animals.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, I have like, but my problem is I'm also kind of an ADHD hobbyist. So I'm kind of like, yeah, that was fun. And then I'm kind of on to...
And you have all these expensive tools for that one specific hobby.
Yeah, it's like the Cricut that I now use like once a year. And I was like, I'm going to get into like custom gift cards or something. And it was like, I use it to make labels for the pantry now. Like, that's it. There's nothing crazy cool happening with
this. This is why before events at MetroStar, before we buy anything, we're like, I bet Debbie has it and we could make it. I think last year we needed ribbon or something for gift bags. I was like, we don't need to buy it. Debbie definitely has ribbon.
Yeah, and I like come in with my basket of offerings.
There are so many different options and sizes and textures.
It's like, would you like tags? We have tags. Yeah, so I like to collect some of those things. And then, you know, I see they come in handy.
They do.
At places like MetroStar and events. Got really into vinyl iron-on. So I was like making all this like MetroStar swag for people. Like trying to figure out how to like heat logos on things.
I got into that this year too.
Yeah.
During wedding planning, a lot of my bridesmaids got heat on iron things.
Yeah, but it's fun. I think it's fun to kind of create something on your own. Maybe that's more what it's about. I came from parents who were very creative and very like DIYers. Like they don't outsource anything. Like in their home, they've never had a plumber or an electrician. Like they do everything themselves. Yeah. My mom made our clothes as kids. Like they are very hands on. So I feel like it's a little bit of those roots of, like, I want to do it myself. I want to learn how to do this thing, whether it's the wrapping or...
You know, that makes so much sense with your career path at MetroStar. I feel like every role you've gotten put into here, you've been like, I will figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a journey.
So yeah, let's get into that journey.
Okay. Let's get into it.
So how did you land at MetroStar?
So it's kind of a funny story. I had just moved to the DC area. I thought I was going to go into law. I decided I did not want to go into law in DC. And so I had this degree in professional and technical writing. And I was kind of like, what am I going to do with this? Like, it's an English degree. Like, the majority of it was actually American lit. So it's kind of like, technical writing was pretty generous, but it was one of the first programs for that in the US at the time. And so I said, I'm going to do something with writing. So a recruiter from a staffing agency called and they said, hey, I have this opportunity. It's only a 6-week contract. Is to work at a company called MetroStar, and you're going to edit a document for the Marine Corps called Concepts and Programs. And I was like, I just need the experience on my resume. So I will take the 6-week gig. So I came into MetroStar. I started working on Concepts and Programs, and it was an amazing experience. And at that time, especially being new to DC, it felt so big. Like I had to go to Quantico every day.
Oh, that's
cool. I had to interview these Marines, and they were putting all this content because they use Concepts and Programs to solicit funding in Congress because it shows everything from like all the pieces of a tank to gloves to like kitchen stations and theater. Like, where are all those pieces made across the U.S. and why do we have to keep funding them? Because it supports these economies at scale. So I did that for 6 weeks. It was a wild time, a very large document. And then at the end of that, someone came to me and said, hey, we heard you're really good with Word and really large documents because you had to do a lot of cross-referencing and figures and like all the stuff that comes with a really complex document. So they said, hey, have you thought about doing proposals? And I'm like, I don't know what proposals are, but I would like to work for more than 6 weeks. So sure, I'll do proposals. And so I got my first foray into proposals. And when I started, it's like, I didn't know anything. I didn't know what a pink team was. I didn't know what an RFP was. I had no idea how a company like MetroStar wins work. And so I got into proposals, which is another team, which I think if anyone does proposals, know it's a really like high pace, high demand, high pressure, very timeline bound. And it was like, your job is just to help us coordinate and then to help us edit resumes. And so at one time, I remember I had edited so many resumes for proposals. Like I would meet people and I would only know them by their resume. I was like, oh yeah, so you're the University of Michigan grad. And they're like, you're a stalker. But it was this amazing experience to see like from the inside, how does a company like MetroStar grow? Like, what does that take? What do you have to know about a customer? What do you have to know about capabilities? We were doing a lot of SharePoint work at that time. So I had to learn, like, what is SharePoint? How are people using it? So I did that for a couple of years. And then Ollie and I were having a conversation one day. And I said, look, I love proposals. I think it's great. And I'm getting really good at telling MetroStar's story. It's just like, I'd love the opportunity to tell it like not in Times New Roman 10, because that's what proposals are super restrictive.
Make sure I don't forget a period and then lose work.
Yeah, exactly. So he said, hey, I've been thinking about standing up a marketing team. You know, is that something you'd be interested in? Then you should apply for it. And I like went home and I was like, oh man, I don't have any marketing experience. Like, I think I'm a kind of creative person, but marketing is like a whole other thing.
Kind of.
Yeah, right. It felt like at that time, like, oh man, like marketing. And I studied tech writing for a reason. I didn't think I could do marketing. Like I started in journalism and then I kind of had these two paths that was like tech writing, being a sort of an English teacher or taking like more of the marketing route. And I chose tech writing because I thought it's very predictable. It's very straightforward. So I ended up in marketing. And
casually.
So, and it was, I will say this, like Ollie did not make that easy, right? I was very new to the company, only a couple years in. He made me interview for it. And I still remember he brought me into his office and he was like, I had so many amazing people interview for this job from agencies, from all of these different places. And I remember telling him, like, I think that's great, but I don't think that they love MetroStar like I do. And he's like, oh, you got the job. So I marketed my way into marketing, I guess is the way you could say it. And at that time it was just me and I had to like learn how to do Twitter, which sounds so silly now, but at that time didn't know how to do Twitter. Brought Stephanie on and she became my very first intern, who's now the director of marketing, which is, I can't even tell you how proud I am of that. It's an amazing growth story of just, you know, just the reinvention that it takes and how she's really stuck with me for a long time. And now she runs it. It's her baby now.
Oh, you've hired everyone on the marketing team, but one person.
I have. Yeah.
Is that impressive. So not being on the marketing team and the team I would most love to join.
Is that like wild to see like your, you know, I know it's Stephanie's baby now, but like everyone, you know, like you're just so connected. Is that crazy?
I mean, I think it's a little surreal because at each position for me, I always felt like I was flying by the seat of my pants. I was just like in sheer terror. Like, I don't know how to do these jobs. And it was a lot of like education and like a lot of reflection and how do you bring people. I think it was also a lot of vulnerability. Like Stephanie and I sat together and we would do a lot of like, hey, we just got this ask. Like, we don't know how to do it. So be like, hey, here's the plan. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to design this. We're going to go do this. So I think for me, I do have to kind of step back and then go like, wow, it's really cool. Like they've grown, they've developed. What we were doing in marketing at that time is so archaic now. You know, they've grown and like evolved so much and the tools and like the thought processes. But I think what's more exciting for me is they don't actually operate in my image. Like they've taken on their own life and they've decided, here's how we're going to evolve it and carry the brand. I think they know the essence of like what I expect and what it looks like for MetroStar. And I think what the company needs from a marketing team. But for the most part, it's like they're off and running and they've embraced it, but also like truly own it. And I think that's maybe the part that gets me a little bit misty, that you can bring on people, you can get them, you know, empower them to a place where they care so much that they will then take the torch and then they'll carry it themselves.
And this is why you're one of MetroStar's leaders. So where are you now at MetroStar?
Yeah. So I, after marketing, did a stint as our first chief of staff and really got to learn corporate strategy. And today, after doing that for a couple years, I transitioned into being the head of people and culture, which was another job.
Yeah, casual.
Well, I mean, it was another one for me where it's like, I never predicted, like if Debbie coming in 2013 was like, where do you think you're going to go? I was like, I'm going to be the head of proposals, right? But now being the head of, you know, people and culture, which for us is human resources and recruiting and marketing. Yeah, it's a little, that's another point for me where sometimes I'm like, ooh, how did I kind of end up in this seat?
So I remember when you got that job and I know that that was a job that had many, many lives before you got there. And then once you got the role, I was like, it's done. Like, that is going to be end game right there. Yeah.
Well, I love that. Yeah. I mean, but I think though, to be honest, it was an actually very terrifying pursuit because you think like I know a lot about MetroStar, but every time you have to enter into these new areas, like in this case, HR and recruiting, I had to sit down with the teams that were in place at that time and say to them, like, I don't know anything about HR and recruiting. I mean, I know enough, right? I've been around for a while, but I'm relying on you all and your expertise. I know MetroStar. I can navigate MetroStar, but like, I'm going to need your all's help to understand HR recruiting. And then how do we bring those two worlds together? And that's, you know, that's a lot of having that moment with yourself and with others around you, I think was also key to that transition. Cause like you said, it's been an area that required people to evolve as quickly as the company was. And that's super challenging because the company is growing so fast. You're like that leader that you were 6 months ago, you can't be anymore because now, you know, you went from 300 people to 440 overnight. That requires new leadership, or you're now in a pandemic. Like HR just became like literally the most important people in the company because we're trying to navigate a pandemic together. So I think it was a little bit of raw honesty. And then I think it was a lot of creative problem solving. And I think it's a lot of people like you, Liz, like even if you didn't say it, I think just kind of believing that, okay, I'm going to trust that we're going to go on this path and like that Debbie was put in this position and kind of see where it takes us and not go, okay, that's wild. See you later. I think is actually a key part to why I've been able to stay in the role and be here and be successful.
What was the scariest part when you started the role?
I don't know. Like, scary. Everything was scary because if you think about it, like HR and recruiting, there's a lot of like legal ramifications. So you, there's in marketing, you could kind of move and shake as long as you don't like violate copyright or something. You're like pretty good, or like have like some sort of big slip. But HR,
take people's photos,
stuff like that. your boundaries are pretty clear, and you have a lot of movement in between them that you can take. But in HR, I learned really fast. Like every direction was like, that's going to get us in trouble. That's going to get us in trouble. And so I think for me, it was more the hard part was in those early days, everything that hit me, I was like, I don't know. Here's a question. I was like, I don't know. Here's this other thing. And, but I was super thankful to be surrounded by really smart people with really great experience that were like, okay, let's break it apart. Here's what we're going to do. Here's this, this new policy we have to put out, or here's this new law that we have to make sure. And then more importantly to say like, here's how we can be creative in an area like HR. So it was overwhelming to just be like, oh, I don't know. And people would ask you questions like, I had been an HR person for 12 years. And I'd be like,
let me Google that real quick.
Yeah. But I had, and I think the other thing that Ollie did, which was, has been instrumental, is he identified an advisory board member, which is Karen Wheeler, who was the former CHRO of SAIC. And so having that sort of just sheer support on the back end where I could call and say, hey, Karen, I have this happening. What do you think? Was an amazing resource to me, because I think a lot of it is you have to have the right people to bounce things off of and say, what do you think? Have you experienced this? What does this look like? And then how do we also still make sure we're doing things in the best interest of our people, which is, I think, the other scary thing to your point, Rachel. And I think that's not a new thing for me. That's an everyday thing of, if we make this decision, is it in the best interest of our people? And is it in the best interest of the most people possible? And that's a thing that you have to weigh almost daily.
Are you ever scared people are going to message you? Because I feel like, unlike at other probably companies our size, it's pretty easy to get to our C-suite, like message bias.
Yeah. No, I think I really appreciate it. I think a lot more people actually avoid me because they just, not in a negative way. I think they just think like, oh, she's so busy, I don't want to bother her. And so they'll go to other members of the team like Karen or Kristen first. So no. And then I do definitely have folks who are like, I have some thoughts and I want to share them. And I'm like, great, I would love to hear them. So I think being able to work through those as well, because you never want everyone to just come to you and say, I love everything you're doing. You kind of want those people who do say like, hey, look, I don't agree with this thing that's going on. I have some ideas about how we could make it better.
So one of our tenets is having hard conversations with empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have advice on, if you're new to having hard conversations, like how did you overcome that, both as a manager and then taking on this huge HR role?
Yeah, I would say, I think it's listening more than you're talking. Hard conversations can often get compounded when we're not listening. We're not taking the time to like really hear somebody out, especially if it's something contentious. Like you have a perspective, I have a perspective. We're clear going into that room. We are not on the same page. But I think that as a leader, it's an art form to really say, I'm going to listen to Liz. I'm going to hear what she has to say, and I'm going to like rein myself in. I'm not going to respond. I'm going to not cut her off. I just want to hear what's going on. And then from there kind of formulating. And I think the other thing I've had to learn is it's okay to maybe walk away from the table and say, I don't know enough yet to make a decision. I hear you. I hear what you're saying. I need time to process it and then come up with some ideas that I think that we could work through. Because I think especially in this world, it's like the transactions, people want them to happen fast, right? Like you want Amazon Prime, you want that at your door the next day.
Which is crazy because government's historically slow.
Yeah. But so I think a lot of that energy comes back into on the corporate side because you are kind of fighting against these other systems. So you want the system on your side, the corporate side, to work really quickly. But it's really just, you got to stop and listen because most of the time, you can get to that empathy place if people just genuinely feel heard. And you might not give them the answer they want, but they're more likely to understand why a certain answer is given because they actually feel like you heard them in the process.
Nice.
This is totally off track of where we were going, but I just saw this written down on my notes and I really want to ask it.
Go for it.
So you've had a lot of roles at MetroStar. Yeah. If you could swap lives with someone at MetroStar for a day, like their question. Role, maybe their like outside of life role as well, who would you swap with and why?
Oh man, that's such a good one.
Thanks.
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that for me, I'm just like genuinely curious about, you know, I think like people like even the AV team that helps us with this, like I think the brain mechanisms that like help bring stories to life in video form are great. I think like our talent acquisition team is another one. I would just love to see a day in the life. I don't think it's like anything like what we think it is. And even like being the leader over them, I could definitely appreciate there's tons of stuff that I don't know about like what that day looks like and how it could be like a series of extreme highs and lows of wins and losses because it's recruiting and that's the nature of it. But a singular person, that's hard for me.
You could cop out and say Ali. And
I think I've worked with Ali for so long. I think I have a good idea.
You know what his day looks like.
I have a good idea of what that day looks like.
It's so funny you said recruiting because that would be the one job that I'd be like, no, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it takes really special people to be recruiters. And to be like good recruiters who represent the company well. But I'm going to have to think about that, Rachel. You know who else I think is really interesting though? Like interns. Like I would love, like we have this amazing cohort of students who have come in with Jorge Vasquez, who's our chief information officer, and they're coming right out of college. Mm-hmm. They're coming into MetroStar, they're coming into government contract, and they kind of get this interesting exposure to both like really high end, like how are we doing AI at MetroStar and like connecting all these systems in order to create faster intelligence for the company. And then they also get the experience of working with a customer like the Army. So I think like theirs would be fascinating. And also I think, you know, a lot of them are Gen Z and I'm an elder millennial. I think just out of sheer curiosity of like, they have such a, what we perceive to be such a different value system of how they approach work and what it means to them and what they want out of work in terms of meaning. So I might actually switch with an intern. And also they're really cool. Like
they are. As someone who's worked on the internship program for like 2 years now, I'm always like, why are you so much smarter than me? Yeah. This is not fair.
They're really cool. And I think just they bring this amazing sort of like wisdom that we don't mm-hmm. typically appreciate for folks who are right out of college. And you know, they're clear about what they want and I respect that.
How has it been balancing different generations? Because you deal, you know, we have a wide scope at MetroStar.
Yeah. So we have 5 generations at MetroStar represented. And I think that it's, again, you'll hear me say this a lot. We really worked hard not to do a one size fits all, especially with teams, because even in those generations, if you start to break it down, you'll have people who are caretakers, people who are parents, people who are living here by themselves and have like no family in this area, people who are like totally isolated for those reasons. So I think it's a little bit of recognizing you've got to have programs that are aligned to each of those generations. Like your boomers are going to care more about like that retirement fund being secure. They want to make sure they have great health coverage. Your Gen Zs want lots of growth potential. So you want to make sure you have like a career lattice. They also want they have a different definition of balance, which is not a bad thing. I think it's like, I heard a really great explanation of it, which is they want the ability to pursue the things that interest them outside of work. They want to have the energy to do that. So it wasn't that I don't want to work a 10-hour day or something. It's more about when I complete work, I want the energy to do the things that I like to do in my free time. And I'm like, I think that's fair. I think all of us would want that.
Yeah. Like for me personally, the new PTO policy that you guys rolled out, I love it because I'm, you know, I have Kate at home and sometimes I get a little embarrassed, like texting Mike or I make Mike being like, uh-oh, like he's sick, like I need to work from home today or whatever. And, you know, it's been so instrumental that like, I know I can still work and be a mom. And like, I'm just so grateful. And I'm like, it's awesome that like all the benefits that have really come out. I know that's one that like, I I'm just so grateful for. So thank you for that one.
No, and you know, I think that it was really from folks being vocal and saying, this is something that's really important to us. And we recognize that Sensible PTO was good at the time, but it kind of lacked some of the clarity and the sort of accountability that it really needed. But at the same time, we also recognize at the leadership level, you like things like burnout and other things like that coming out of the pandemic in particular is very real and very real, like implications for people. So being clear that you have this time to take off, you absolutely should take it off. Believe it or not, we do run reports each quarter and we go through on the people and culture team and we say, you are underutilizing. Like these people, so their manager needs to talk to them and say, you need to take more leave. Like you can't be taking no leave for this many months at a time. So there's the kind of checks and balances. There's also the people that are like, you're burning real hot. So you might want to like slow it down a bit. You're going to have no leave come like June 1st. I think that it's good to hear that it helps provide some of that flexibility.
For flexibility, what has it been like? Because you've worked at MetroStar when it wasn't remote and now you've worked here when it was fully remote and now it's sort of hybrids. It kind of depends on your team.
Yeah.
How have you navigated that? And do you think that it was, in a weird sort of way, good for MetroStar to have this hybrid approach or not?
Yeah. I mean, I think it I always say it depends.
Lawyer.
Yeah.
Political answer.
Well, beltway answer.
Here's some of the things I would say is that the MetroStar of, you know, early 2020 and the MetroStar of 2024 are very different companies. We've had 30% growth year over year just in that time period. And that was not just in the DMV, but that was like across the country. So all the demographics and the locations and all of that also changed during that time. So I think that, you know, before we were sort of thrust into this like forced remote work, MetroStar was very much a company that valued in-person work. Like we were sitting here in this building talking about like, oh man, we got to get more space. We got to get more suites. Like we have all these people coming in, we're outgrowing it. And then I think that what we started to realize, like everyone else did, that remote work does work. And we saw that go through 2020 and then, you know, most of 2021. And then we started gradually reintroducing. We also decided we weren't going to take an all or nothing approach. We were going to call it work where you need to. Some of our people have to be at a customer site. They have mission critical missions that cannot go down. They must be there at the customer. Some of our people do not. Some of our people were hired in like Montana. So like we can't tell them to come back into the office.
Fly to Reston.
Yeah. I'd personally like to visit them in Montana.
But same with the Colorado people for me.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Bloomington people. I don't know why. Every single time someone talks about Indiana and Bloomington, I'm like, why are you selling Bloomington, Indiana to me so well?
Yeah.
That I'm like ready to take PTO to go to Indiana.
It's amazing. Yeah. And it's a great like community there. So I think it's, we did realize we couldn't just come out and like do a firm. Our company wasn't designed for that. It wasn't going to work for our people. But I think like as it lingers on, there's still ramifications in the other side. I think that we definitely see an increase from our side now in 2024, you know, 4 years later, of new hires who feel disconnected, new hires who don't know, especially like a student coming right into a full-time job. Ooh, now. Yeah. Like they are actually pretty sad that they don't get that office culture. They don't get the whole, like my team comes in, we go to happy hour.
Yeah.
So we've had to really be thoughtful about how do we now design some of those sort of triggers or anchors that can provide people the opportunity. Like you are all here. No one said you have to fill Mocket here, but I think that you've recognized that there's some chemistry that happens from you being together that's maybe not
like hanging out
quite the same. Yeah. So, but you all made that choice. And I think that that's the beauty of it. But I mean, time will tell. I think we like to see what the big companies are doing and then maybe like watch what doesn't go
as
so well.
As we slowly become a big company.
Learn from it. Yeah. But that's the nice thing about the size we're in. We still get a lot of that flexibility and the autonomy to say, hey, this is kind of where we're going to put our people. But I do agree that there are cultural implications to it, that for teams who are especially like newly forming, I can see how it's super challenging if you don't have a strong lead in place,
yeah,
who can really help connect them beyond the transactional, we have our stand up, you tell me what to do all day, the more of like, how do I get to care about Liz as a person when I only have a 15-minute stand up with her and then I never see her again for the rest of the week?
How's it been juggling? So not only have we moved to sort of remote work, we've had a lot of hires outside of the DMV, outside of our Bloomington. Yeah. Like, we've just grown across the country in terms of where we have employees. How's that been, not from a return to work standpoint, but just like culturally? Yeah.
And every state's so different.
Too, yeah.
Like what they want.
Yeah. It's a challenge. So we have people in 37 states now. Before the pandemic, so early 2020, we had people in like 11 states. So we've had to first learn, what does it even mean to hire somebody in these states? There's all these compliance and tax laws and all these things that come along with that. And each of them are unique. And then to your point, it was like, how do we look at what that means from a cultural perspective? So when we won our really big Marine Corps program, which has two big pieces to it in Indianapolis and Kansas City, we were like moving out with them. And then our PM was like, hey, time out, guys. Like, their value system is very different than a DC value. Because we were kind of rocking in there like, hey, yeah, this is how this is all going to go down. And our PM was like, we really like your energy, but the vibe is off, as the cool kids would say. And so we had to have some of that education of like, hey, these folks in these areas, their value system is different than a DC value system. And so how we do communications and team get-togethers and all those types of things are going to be a little bit different. So still very much like tethered to MetroStar, if you will, but it's what I would call is it's like its own sort of iteration of it that makes sense for them. And then for the other pockets, you try to look at it and say, you know, again, Colorado is different. And I think that they kind of want something different in terms of like what that looks like for their balance. Not to say that they're not working just as hard out there, but that's a much more like outdoor type life. We have someone in Portland, Oregon. Like, that's a different
the best person.
Yeah. So I think it's a little bit of like learning from them and what they'll share. But I think that what they all have in common is they all want to be working for a great company. They want to feel valued in the work that they're doing, and they want to feel like there's a future in it. And I think if we stick to those three things, then yeah, we can keep getting states, and hopefully some days we'll do overseas work and things like that. But it was definitely an experience to go, oh yeah, we were totally putting a Northern Virginia DC lens on people living in Kansas City who were like, that's not, we're not quite there.
DC definitely has its own vibe.
Yeah.
You're talking about planning events and things for these people. What have been some of your favorite events that you've planned at MetroStar?
Yeah. I mean, I'm more of an event supporter. Shadi is definitely the lead on events at MetroStar. She's the social chair, if you will. I've loved everything from when we used to do trivia happy hours. Trivia happy hours used to be when everyone was in person, like trivia was a thing here.
I was too scared to join them because I'm terrible at trivia. Because I thought it was like the cool kids and the smart kids. And I was like, oh, but go team.
No, it was so competitive. Yeah. Loved trivia.
That's good to hear. I'd probably get fired at trivia.
No, you wouldn't. But there definitely.
Maybe the fun table.
No, not when it comes to a game. I'm in it to win it.
I'm only like that for, I'm very serious about Connect Four.
Oh, see, ooh, that's a good one.
Sorry, this is such a
that's a good one. Trivia one. trivia was really good. We had a lot of those. I loved our 20th anniversary, like being a part of that. We have our 25th coming up, which is super exciting. And sometimes I think the events are that I really love is just when like teams will invite me to do like a lunch with them and like sit with them. As the head of HR, there's a lot of like reservations that come with being invited to things. So people like, I'll get on calls with people and they'll be like, I didn't do anything. And it's like, no, I just really want to talk about this other thing. Cause you're the head of HR now. And that can be sometimes jarring. So I love it when, people will just invite me to their lunches or, like we have a state team that does a lot of get togethers and they'll invite us out, which is awesome.
I always forget you're the head of HR sometimes when I'm talking to you, cause you started as my boss.
And then
I'm like, wait, I need to back up.
Yeah, some people do. And sometimes I have to be like, I am the head of HR. a.m.
Don't tell me that story.
But I think for brand new people, they're just, again, I think if they get a call from the SVP of HR, it's kind of like scary.
I remember Karen put on a an invite on my calendar right after I came back from parental leave.
He's an HR person.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, HR wants to talk to me. Like, what did I do? Did I mess something up? Yeah. So then I called her back and she's like, hey, how's it being a new mom? And I was like, oh my God, this is like so less stressful than I thought this conversation was going to go.
Yeah. It's a thing. It's a thing that I didn't expect was going to come from
being
HR.
Sometimes when people just text you hi and you're like,
or like quick chat.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
She used to do that all the time.
And then I learned. Because I did, like, I think someone.
I think Allison and I were like, I'm going to change my shirt.
Someone volunteered as tribute and was like, hey, Debbie.
It's probably Allison.
When you write chats that just say, hey, and then you get distracted and you don't respond for 5 minutes, it makes us all very stressed. So I'm like, hey, or now I'll say like, because I used to do this thing too, because I got really excited in remote where I would just call people. Like I wouldn't have to call them. I would just call them. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think I created a lot of accidental anxiety for people. Now I say, hey, I just want to ask you about this thing. Do you have a few minutes to talk? So I think we've crossed that bridge. But yeah, I'm sorry for that.
Is there anything for anyone who's listening, is there anything that you really want to share about your career or about growing in multiple different careers in the same company that you would want to share?
Ooh.
You thought this was going to be an easy mocking episode.
I do feel
we could talk about crafts more if you want.
I do feel like I'm like Taylor, yeah, interviewing for my own job. look, I will say that for me, it's been a mixture of hard work and luck. But also for a lot of the major leaps that I've made, it was because somebody else looked at me and said, I think you would be really good at this, because I've always I want to be super good at that thing that I'm doing. Like when I was in marketing, I was like, I'm going to be the best marketing person. And then as chief of staff, I was like, I'm going to be the best chief of staff. And sometimes, that would make it so I wasn't necessarily like looking towards the horizon. I was just like, this thing that I'm doing, I want to be the absolute best at it. So it took other people kind of approaching me and saying, hey, I really think you should consider doing this job. You should take it on. And then me saying,
okay.
First, like, you know, kind of like that heart jolt a little bit, but then kind of stepping back and saying, clearly they see something and I need to trust them and kind of just take this leap and see where it takes me. It's like, what's the worst that can happen is you could really fail miserably and not be at MetroStar anymore. but at the same time, I kind of was like, maybe that's part of the beauty of the experience. So my two things I would say is like, listen when other people share that, because genuinely most people really mean it when they see that potential in you. And it can even be in small things. Like not all of it was like, hey, come be this leader of something. Some of it was just like, hey, you know, we need your help telling a story about how we implement X and Y technology. And I was kind of like, I don't know if that's me, but I will sit at the table.
I don't know what that technology is right now, but I will Google it.
Yeah, I will. And that's the other piece. And you've said it a couple times, Rachel, but it's also that curiosity piece of, okay, I don't know what that is, but let me educate myself really quickly, and then also be honest and be like, yeah, I'm not sure what you guys are talking about, but keep talking and I'll figure it out.
So this whole, like, as I'm listening to you, the one word that keeps coming back is vulnerability. Like, you've been very honest about how vulnerable you've been as you've done each of these leaps. What advice do you have for people with being vulnerable? Because I think sometimes it's like, oh, can't be vulnerable, like have to go in like I look
girl
perfect.
Boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, vulnerability is a scale, because I also think for me, I was always in positions that I knew very well. There was a lot of people that did not believe I should be in them because I wasn't qualified. You know, I did not meet the qualifications on paper to sit in a number of these roles. So I think it's a mixture. I think for me, I had to recognize which people it was appropriate to be vulnerable with and which people really needed to see like strength and consistency. So it is, I think in this forum, right? Like this is right because we're kind of reflecting, but you know, if you're doing something hard and you're rolling it out, I would never go out to the company and be like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I hope this works for us. So I think it's that art of of really working to back yourself up. And then you get those wins, which help create confidence from people. But I've learned that you can't necessarily be vulnerable with everybody. And then there's different tiers of vulnerability, right? And I think that coming back to Rachel, her and I relationship started again, more of that direct supervisor type relationship. And it was important for her to trust me as a leader. So I couldn't have been all vulnerable, because then she would have been like, look, I left this wild situation and now this feels like a wild situation.
Well, I was jobless when you hired me. So,
yeah, which was a wild situation. But I think it's understanding when to and when not to is what I would say about vulnerability. Like, there are definitely times when, like, I know everyone hates the girl boss term. I know it's very age, but there are times when they need to see you as a strong leader who has put it together and who's going to like help own and drive this thing through. And then you have smaller pockets where you can say, listen, this is kind of scary. Can we talk about how we can work together to get to that place that we may not be yet?
As someone who watches you give messages, you come across very confident. And I think you've been put into, especially the pandemic with vaccines, with mandates that were going around the government and stuff like that.
Liz just took me back. I'm sweating.
Yeah, you were so confident in everyone was so confident in the messaging that went out across the company.
It's a good PowerPoint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, PowerPoint is one of my top three traits. Please endorse me on LinkedIn. Yeah, I think Liz, for that, that was a really scary time. And then it was also highly contentious,
yeah,
right? Like, a vaccine mandate for COVID-19 was going to be just, everyone was going to have thoughts and feelings mm-hmm. about it. So it actually, to do that one, we had an entire war room here where we had printed off every mandate from every agency. We had all of the research. We had like human resources law. Like, we had, it looked like something out of like CSI, like just paper everywhere. So I think some of that messaging comes from, like, we invested heavily in saying, here's all the ways that this has to roll out. Like, here's what we have to do. Here is what our people are going to demand of us to navigate with them. And it's just, I feel like you almost couldn't be overprepared going into that. You had to think about, here's all the possible outcomes. You're going to have somebody who literally quits their job over this. What are you going to do? And so we ran that path. And then it was like, you know, the easy one is like, sure, here's my card, I'm good. But then it was like, now you have medical information. How do you have to store that? Yeah. So for us, it was, and for things like that, and it can even be something like changing PTO. It can be like rolling out our career lattice. We spend a lot of time behind the scenes, just like architecting, researching, putting it together. And then I have to run sessions with like the executive team. And actually they're the harder buy-in, right? To say, here's where we're going. You all have to help champion this across the company. And so you have to do that education with them and then kind of trickle it out. But I appreciate you saying that.
It was very impressive.
Yeah. You were so confident going into that.
It was very impressive. You're like the Leslie Knope of MetroStar.
Oh, no, I'm 100% the Leslie Knope. But I also think there's those points too, where it's like, even in that, in some of the Q&As, there was like, it's like, okay, that's a great question. We don't have an answer for that yet. We'll take it and come back to you.
Q&As were a lot less scary than I thought they were going to be, which is just goes to show how much prep you guys put into it.
Yeah. And that's a little of getting ahead of it, right? Yeah. Of, here's where we think this could go wrong, or here's where people are going to be very personally affected. So let's give them an answer, so they're not kind of squishing around and saying, well, what do I do? As much as it's appropriate.
Yeah. Very impressive. And then I know we're coming up on time, and as we all know, you're a very, very busy woman. I think one of my last questions, it kind of goes into some of the things we've talked about, but really, I guess it's more of like a personal question. What is something when you're interviewing people, which I don't know how many people you interview for jobs?
Tons.
Okay, tons. Cool. What is like one question you always wish they would ask you, but like a lot of people never do?
Today, Rachel? Something I wish they would ask me. I don't know if I've ever thought of that, actually.
Yes, you have, because you told me once that you wished I would have said something.
Did I? What did I tell you?
I'll tell you after you answer.
Okay. I've interviewed a lot of people. Not that yours wasn't memorable. Question I wish they would ask me. I always appreciate when people ask questions that it's very clear, like they've done their research on the company and on MetroStar. I've had interviews where some people were like, who are you again? And like, it's kind of like, I know you're interviewing a lot, like at least make it sound like this is a job you really want. So yeah, any question that sort of reflects it, like sometimes people will have like looked into my LinkedIn background and they'll say something like, you know, to tell me like what it's like to be a first generation person. So I like that question because I think it shows like that they've done their research. So I guess my short answer would be anything that really shows that they've taken their time and not just about me. It's like less about me. It's like, have they learned about the company? And we have a lot out there. We're very generous with information that we put out.
Yeah.
I think I have a lot more questions that I wish I would ask people, partly out of curiosity and partly because there's just so much that comes with changing your job and like making this new leap in investment with a new company to put your career into, that I often leave interviews and like, oh man, I really should ask that question. Mm. What did I ask you?
Well, now I'm also interested.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't so much of what I could have asked. It was what you wanted the answer to be. You'd ask like, where do you see yourself in 3 or 5 years at MetroStar if I give you this job or something along those lines? Yeah. I don't even remember what I said. And I think like a year and a half later or something, we might have been at a happy hour. You were like, I really wish, and I always want someone to say this, I want them to be like, I want your job in 3 to 5
that
years.
That is true. That is true. And I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot that.
I haven't. I'm already proud of the anxiety.
And I wanted to be like, Timmy, I do not want your job.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. When I do think that the 3 to 5 year question is a little bit loaded because most people aren't really planning out that far. And you want them to have some flexibility, especially in a growing company. Like if they come in and they're too stern about what they're going to do, it's like, listen, we need a little movement, right? Like
you may be disappointed.
You're not going to be the CEO in 3 years. But I do think that what's interesting about why I said that to Rachel in particular, because Rachel was so confident going in. And she was like, here's what I'm doing. And then like, there was some lapses in communication where I'd be like, listen, I'm not sure what we're doing. Stephanie and I were going back and forth. And Rachel was back in. She was like, hey guys, here I am. Like, I'm just wondering what the next steps are. And
I was jobless. I needed them to answer me.
So I think that when I say that, like someone wanting my job, it's that, like, that kind of like that raw ambition that is like, listen, like I really see myself growing in this company. Like I want to be the lead. I want to go after that. I've always respected that kind of energy because I also think it's pretty brave to do that. Now, if you do it, you're going to have to back it up. But yeah, I mean, Ali and I over the years have often spoke about that. Like, it's nothing off me. Like if you take my job because you're better than me, I actually love that for you. Like, that also means it's a great thing for MetroStar because now they have this super rock star who is leading in whatever capacity. So yeah, I definitely told that to Rachel.
I'll never forget it.
We built a little social equity before I was like, by the way, you should have told me you wanted my job.
Yeah. It wasn't like a weekend. No, the first thing Debbie made me do was work on a proposal.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know what a proposal is, but let's do it.
Yeah. We did a lot of those types of things. But like, I mean, if you look at it now, right? Again, Stephanie was my first hire and now she has the job that I had. So.
Oh, that's true. Nice.
I'm definitely an equal opportunity player here. I would love to like someday again have one of the people on the TA team today be who's leading TA like in the next couple of years. Same thing with the HR team. Like I have very little desire to keep holding down everything. And I think that every time those folks have grown, they've grown up others with them. And we always said that in marketing, like from my very first day in marketing as a marketing manager, I said, my vision is to bring people in, grow them up. So we're not hiring over them, which I call suffocating from the top. Mm-hmm. We're hiring underneath them, because if we're hiring underneath, it means each of them keep growing up in their capacity. And I think so far we've done pretty good of living up to that. At least on the marketing team, we've done pretty well on the recruiting team as well. And then same thing in HR, but it's always about my vision for everyone is like, if I'm going up, y'all are coming with me. I definitely can't do it alone.
I love that. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Mock It. I know it was kind of a last minute big shimmying into your office asking.
Hey, I think here's the thing. This is also, it's like speaking of full circle, like Liz, I don't know if you know this, but Ali and I sat and said, we think it'd be really cool if we had a podcast. Terrifying. And then I was like, yeah, you know, I think it'd be really cool if we had a podcast and we were throwing names around. And at one point, because you had just done something, you had done a presentation or something with Marie. And I remember like Ollie and I being like, we think it should be Liz and Marie. And both of us were like, yes, absolutely. And that's how many seasons ago now?
2021 is when we started.
Yeah. So it's also a little bit of a kind of full circle. Like I've always been the behind the scenes champion of Mock It and like definitely love how you all have come into this new season with this fresh, you know, approach. But it is a little bit of kind of a misty moment for me that like this idea, because I gotta be honest, sometimes we do have a lot of wild ideas. You know, not all of them take off, but this one has been one that has been really amazing. So thank you for keeping it alive and of course bringing it forward.
We started in a closet and now we're here in a studio.
I know, all grown up.
Like a very little tiny closet. You guys had masks on when we were first doing our first episode. We had to turn the AC off because the AC was too loud. And
when you first reached out with us, I thought you were
Give you an option. I was just like, you guys are the new podcast hosts. Welcome.
I thought you were reaching out for us to write some blog posts. That's what we thought we were going into for the meeting.
Nope. I took some Debbie rules and I made a PowerPoint and was like, this is what we're doing. It's going to be super fun. See you on the state.
Well, and then when we sort of shifted up for this season, you were like, so I don't know how I feel about this idea, but I'm going to be your co-host. And I was like, yes! I was more excited than you were. Like,
well, I was scared. I kind of got voluntold to be the co-host.
But yeah, that was another one where Stephanie and I were like, so here's what we're thinking. And she's like, here's a list of people. And I go, I don't think we should do that. Let's just put Rachel in. But you have to have like that chemistry and stuff. Yeah. And
I had, at least we've been working. I was the background person for a long time on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Mock It wouldn't have happened without you guys championing it. There's zero chance.
Listen, we could have put someone in here, but they wouldn't have loved it as much as you do.
It's true.
That I wholeheartedly agree with that.